This is the web stream of KBOO Portland. KBOO is 100% community supported. If you have not yet become a member, go to the website kboo.fm and click on the tip jar.
Good morning. It's the second Wednesday of the month, and it's 11 o'clock. That must mean just one thing. It's time for the dirt bag.
Yes.
Good morning, and welcome. This is Glenn Andreessen here beside you now until 12 o'clock noon. In the studio with me is my guest, Jim Gilbert of One Green World. Full disclosure, One Green World is an underwriter of this program.
Good
Jim,
morning,
welcome
Glenn.
Back.
It's great to be back, Glenn. Sorry I couldn't be here in December.
Well, you had some important things to do.
You know, the funny things, I don't even remember what they are.
Well, you were meeting with the governor.
That's right. Yes, that's right. That was a very interesting meeting, too. So,
And we had an interesting and good show here, too, I believe. It was our first annual beekeeping edition. Hope to do that every December. Seems like a nice time, and we had some good folks on there. So, boy, it's starting to be the busy season here, and did you find out what we needed to find out?
Working on it.
Okay. We're trying to figure out exactly when the Yard, Garden, and Patio show is, which is next in February. It'd be then. Is it the first weekend or the second weekend or the third weekend? That's kind of what our question is.
February 8th to the 10th.
It's February 8th to the 10th, so we will not have a show then.
Before the Yard, Garden, and Patio show.
Okay.
So we should mention that.
Yes. Well, isn't that interesting there? Well, in any event, that is one of the events that's coming up, but there are a lot of things that are happening. And Jim, you have a list of that.
Yes. Well, and this today, like today, I mean, many people are probably thinking that winter has returned, which it certainly feels like that out there, and a good day to sit by the fire if you
yes.
Or this evening and contemplate all these fun things that are going to be happening.
Well, I went for a run this morning, and it was about 48 degrees when I left, and when I came back, it was about 44 degrees.
It's interesting.
Yeah.
I noticed it looked like
it's going to get cooler today.
There was some even possible snow. I went over the hill on I-5. It looked like there was even some little snow mixed in the rain.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Mm-hmm.
To get indoors where it's nice and warm and see all the cool plants and gardening products and stuff, this is the time to do it. It's coming up. So the first show is actually in Eugene. It's the first garden show in Oregon of the year. And that is the Good Earth Home Show, which starts this month, the 18th. It's actually a week from this coming Friday, and the 19th and the 20th. We'll be down there with plants, and there's going to be a whole room full of, I mean, a couple of different buildings full of plants and all sorts of gardening tools and also landscaping ideas and stuff you can pick, literature you can pick up and dream about and all that.
Do they have seminars too?
Yes. In fact, yours truly is doing two seminars.
Good.
Yeah, it'll be fun. The Home Orchards, in sort of chronological order, the Home Orchard Society is having an event on January 19th, which I think you're involved with.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
At the McLaughlin Theater down at Clackamas Community College.
That's right. I can even fill that in a little bit. I'll be talking about or at least some ideas of plants to plant to attract pollinators and beneficial insects for your garden. Then also, Jim, you could probably help me out. What's his name? Jim Oliphant? Is that his name?
Yeah, yes, I believe that's right.
He will be talking about, boy, now I can't remember, blueberries?
He does do blueberries.
And maybe some other
organic gardening topics.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah. And thirdly, I can't remember this fellow's name, but he will be talking about using the internet to gather information on weather-related events to help with not necessarily only spray schedules, but combating fruit pests such as the codling moth, because
yep.
That's based upon certain number of degree days and after you first spot an adult when the yep. eggs will be a problem, et cetera. So.
Yeah.
And then there's a panel from all three of us at the end to answer any questions that may not have been already answered.
Yeah, it's going to be a really good event. And this is called Think Spring, the new title for it. Actually, I didn't put that title in our catalog. And this is one where you need to pre-register because it's actually put on by Clackamas Community College officially. And I could give the number to call.
I think so.
Okay. It's 503-657-6958. And that's extension 2246. 503-657-6958, extension 2246. And you can also look that up on the Home Orchard Society website, which is homeorchardsociety.org.
Jim, I commend you. You read that without your glasses.
I can do things up close.
Yeah, good for you, though.
I can barely tell that you're over there again.
Oh,
actually, it's not that bad. Yeah. Another Home Orchard Society event before the Yard, Garden, and Patio show is they have a pruning workshop. And that is on February 2nd, also out at Clackamas Community College. That's a pre-registration event, and that same information is available on their website, and that same phone number would be how to register for that. So those are two really good events coming up from the Home Orchard Society.
Right, at the Clackamas Community College site.
Yes. Yeah, one's going to be at the theater, and then McLaughlin Theater. The other's going to be at their Arboretum.
Very good. And they're always well signed out there. I like that.
Yeah.
Where you're going.
Very professional organization. I've just become a board member, actually. So.
Well, I was specifically speaking of Clackamas Community College.
Oh, I see.
They will put signs out there as well as the Home Orchard Society.
That's right. Good. And then, as we mentioned earlier, the Yard, Garden, and Patio show, which is here in Portland, of course, at the Convention Center, is a great event, and we'll be there as well. And I believe I'm also doing a talk there. And that will be on February 8th, 9th, and 10th, early February. So,
yeah.
And that's a great show for just all sorts. I mean, you know, lots and lots of Oregon nurseries go there, and you just walk around and spend, you know, plan a few hours because it's a lot to see.
At least. Yeah. That's right. And then there are seminars there too.
All three of those days.
That's right.
Seminars.
Right. And I'll be there talking.
Great.
I'll be talking bees at that one. And then I'm also part of a vegetable gardening panel.
Yeah. And I'll be talking about plants, fruiting plants, as I seem to do occasionally. So that's I suppose I should mention also that I think when we were here, I was here last, we didn't have our new catalog out, but there's a big announcement in there that maybe you should mention about the old grand opening.
Yes, you've got your brand new retail outlet here in
Farm Outlet Store.
Yeah, okay. In Southeast Portland, 134th off.
Right off Foster.
Right off Foster, just a block
just
or so
south
off of that.
Foster, right. 6469 Southeast 134th. So on Monday, January 21st, we open our doors for the first time.
So that means you can drive just to Southeast Portland to peruse the catalog, pick up plants. Excellent.
Yeah.
Rather than heading out to almost Molalla.
It's pretty exciting, actually. We've been working hard on this spot, and it's right near, there's a place called Zenger Farm. You may know that. You know, the city's sustainability farm, which is down the road from that, and also Leech Botanic Gardens in that area, too. So we have some great neighbors.
Right. Okay, that'll take care of things until the next month, and then we'll have another long list.
That's right.
At our February show. Coming up on this show, we've got the plant of the month, and that will be onions. Really, it's pretty interesting about onions, and at least what I think is kind of interesting. At half past the hour, we'll have a new garden stumper. And past that, we will be talking about pruning, or Jim will be talking about pruning kiwis and some other vining fruits. Possibly. We'll also we'll talk about gathering scion wood if you're going to be practicing your grafting and you want to build your own trees. This is the time to be gathering up that scion wood. We'll also throw in some taking care of tools topic in there. And right towards the end, I'll talk about what's going on in the bee colony this month. As usual, if you have any gardening questions, please feel free to give us a ring, 503-231-8187. All right, onions. The Oregon State Extension has some very good publications on onions, and I've printed off one of those. I'll use that as kind of my jumping off point here, is what we have to say about onions. And really, to think about onions, they come in, or you can plant them in three different ways from, and of course, they all start with a seed at some point, but maybe the most common way is to plant onion sets. And these are bulbs, little tiny bulbs that have been harvested in the summer and then dried so they don't sprout. And you can get those, and they're probably the size of, oh, I don't know, you've probably seen them, a nickel, maybe. And those can be planted. In fact, any of these can be planted really any time that the soil is dry. It's not unusual at all to get them in the ground in March, maybe even earlier if we're going to have a somewhat mild February. The one drawback, or at least one drawback for planting sets, is that you have less varieties to choose from, fewer varieties to choose from. Just you might have a choice of a red or a white, something like that. The other way is to purchase seedlings. And these would not have any bulb on them, but they would be anywhere from maybe 4 or 5, 6 inches long, just a root mass with a little bit of the white part and then mostly green. Of course, they are live plants, so they have to be treated as such. You don't want to let them dry out. And once again, you're limited by what type are available. And I would advocate just going for the seeds. It's really pretty easy. I can tell you my technique, and you have, of course, a large choice now, any choice of what kind of onions you plant. The ones that I plant, generally, I plant 3 or 4 varieties, usually always a mild onion called the Walla Walla Sweets, just Walla Wallas. And then the other types that I plant are very good storage onions. Copra and Varsity are two of the white or yellow varieties, and Redskin is the other variety that I plant, a red onion. And both of these store very well. We're still using onions from last season now. I've got them in the garage, and of course we're down to the more smaller ones now because the bigger ones get chosen first. But very few of them have sprouted, and it's just very gratifying and tasty to go out to the garage and grab some onions and cut them up, saute them for whatever purpose we may have for those. So remember those varieties. Copra and Varsity are great storage onions, as is Redskin. Walla Wallas will not store at all, maybe a month at the most, and they'll start sprouting there. So my technique for starting onions is I'll just get a 4-inch deep pot. Doesn't really matter how big it is, but I want it to be pretty deep so the roots have a place to expand and extend themselves. If it's a real small or short pot, then the roots will go around and around, which is not good. I will just sprinkle the seeds, fill the pot up with potting soil. Sprinkle the seeds on the top, not coating it completely. But putting a pretty healthy amount of seeds on there. Maybe if you could spread them out evenly, it would be an eighth of an inch apart, pretty close. And then I'll just cover those ever so slightly with a little bit more potting soil, and then put it in a warm place, or at least some place that has bottom heat. That's really the key to getting most seeds germinated, is to make sure they have enough heat. If you were to plant them outside now, they wouldn't germinate at all. They may rot before they germinate, and if they didn't, it would just take until the soil warms up. So why not just give them some bottom heat? And there are various resources for that: heating mats, soil cables. Some people put them on the top of a refrigerator or freezer, maybe on a... does anybody have waterbeds anymore?
I think they all popped by now.
Well, you know, those are that water was heated in some of the cases, and they'd put them on there. So there's a lot of different things, different methods on that you can use. But the bottom heat is very important, but only until they get germinated. Once they're germinated, then the bottom heat is no longer necessary, and light becomes what is very necessary then. It's pretty hard to grow a lot of seeds successfully indoors if you don't have good lighting or a greenhouse. And you very well may want to invest in some type of auxiliary lighting. And Justin was telling me one of our new underwriters for this program is an indoor supply, gardening indoor supply. So you might check them out. And in any event, what we want to get is strong stalks on anything that you start inside. But we're talking about onions here particularly. None of this wimpy stuff. So come by every so often and brush them with your hands. Just put some stress on them. Or if you had a fan that you could have turned on periodically, anything to move them and to simulate what they might be experiencing outside. And what we don't want is to be planting little wussy plants outside. You know, they need to be toughened up inside. Too. So I'll let those little seedlings get to maybe 2 or 3, well, certainly more than 2, 3 or 4 inches tall. And then it's time to put them outside. I'll transplant them outside I try to do this in March, because these type of onions that we are planting here are known as, well, they're day length sensitive. The word photoperiodic is the term that's used to describe them. And our goal here is to get the biggest plants by the time we have about 14 hours of daylight. Because at that point, the plant is programmed, if you will, to just grow bigger and bigger, more green, if you will, the upper part. And it doesn't start bulbing until we reach about 14 hours of daylight. At that point, the onion itself, the green part, may not get too much bigger because it will start forming a bulb. So the bottom line is the more green you have by the time that the onion starts bulbing, the bigger the bulb will be. And that's generally what we're after with onions. So if you plant in March or the first part of April, you will be much better off than if you plant the end of April, because the end of April is about the time where we start getting 14 hours of daylight. So take home message, get them in as soon as possible. And if you have good soil, that should easily be done, will be able to be done in March. So even cover that up, even cover up some of the soil in the meantime to help it dry out with cardboard or something like that would not be a bad idea. The onions are biennials. That is to say, if you leave them in the ground past their harvest date in July or so, they will overwinter, but then they will start sending out a seed stock the next spring. And at that point, the bulb is no longer edible and usable, because most of the resources will be used to make that seed stock. When the onions start, when they start falling over naturally, when the stalks start falling over naturally in the summer, the July-ish time, then start withholding water, or even withhold water before then. And when maybe close to half of the stalks have fallen over naturally, push over the rest of the stalks. That will prevent them from putting out any more growth, and it will start hardening them off. Now, some books I've read will say to leave the onions in the ground or pull them up and leave them on the surface for a while to let them dry out. I don't recommend that anymore, as I had terrible problem with sun scald on my red onions 1 year. Just baked the upper part of it there. So I'm very disappointed in that. And I found that if I start withholding water so the ground is pretty dry after 2 or 3 weeks, they really are able to cure nicely.
And they must like our climate because we have those nice dry summers. So
yes.
We're not faced with deluges of rain.
Right. And the other point here to get large onions is to, when you transplant them out, to space them, I'd say 2 to 3 inches apart. Because even if you plant them 3 inches apart, it's not impossible at all for an onion to be 3 inches wide. Mm-hmm. And if that was the point, then it would be touching the onion next to it. So
be happy.
That's right. Well, maybe that's more than you ever needed to know about onions, eh?
I think that's great, Glenn. I was fascinated by that, actually. It was really interesting. I mean, I've grown onions years ago when I lived up in the mountains, but haven't really done it for a while. And that's really good information.
Okay.
Thank you.
Well, there's really only one song that we can play to relate to this, don't you think? Let's go to that one now, Kurt. Well, it kind of pains me to cut that one off, but we've got so much information to go over. We'll go on. That's not Booker T and the MGs, but it is Green Onions. That's a version by Roy Buchanan, the late, great guitarist Roy Buchanan. Okay, we have reached 11:23. Jim Gilbert is here along with me at the Dirt Bag, and it's time to talk a little bit about maybe gathering scion wood. Maybe just explain why and what that is and why we do it now.
Right. This is a really magic process, and it's been done for a long, long time. But if you want, and a lot of people, because we don't grow up with this information anymore. Usually our families, a lot of people don't pass this on to their kids, so we have to start now with it. And if you want to, if you want to make a tree, a fruit tree, and we'll talk, let's focus on that, from a certain variety, which you can't take an apple seed and go out and plant it and make a really very good apple by doing that. So you want to...
Well, the odds are that it's not going to be very good apple.
Odds are, yes, pretty darn good that you're not going to get...
It could. And that's how some apple varieties are...
Right. And most of us don't have room for the thousands of seedlings to select the best one.
They're mostly accidental.
Right. So you don't grow apples from seeds. You grow them from grafted trees. And so essentially what you're doing is you're taking a piece from the tree, your desired tree, which could be any one of hundreds of varieties, or could be one that maybe isn't a variety yet, and it's someone you just happen to find in a field somewhere or somebody else's seedling that you really like. So... what you do is you take a piece of wood from that tree, and that has all the genetics required to make more of itself, and then you borrow a root system, essentially, and that can be, the root system could be grown from seed. You could plant apple seeds and use them as a rootstock, or you can buy a rootstock and use
that. And let's just, I'll explain a few things as we go along here. If you were to plant a seed and then use that whatever grew from that as the rootstock. That is to say that we would graft this piece of wood that you just gathered onto that seedling rootstock. It would work, but the tree would probably be much larger than you would want it to be.
That's right.
So we might as well take advantage of other people's experimenting through the last several hundred years to get a smaller tree.
That's right.
And that's why we choose certain rootstocks.
That's right. It's going to end. And that's a very interesting subject. And there are several apple rootstocks that can be used to make smaller trees. And an example would be just M26. And the M stands for Malling, which was the name of the research station in England that developed these dwarf rootstocks. So M26 is one that we use at the nursery.
That might have been the 26th.
Yes.
Iteration of it or something.
Right.
You know, it really doesn't mean much,
right.
But it identifies it.
Identifies
now.
It, exactly. And so that's that rootstock makes a tree 8 to 12 feet in height, depending upon the variety, the vigor of the variety. And the interesting thing about rootstocks, when to make small trees, the rootstock has less vigor. The smaller the tree, the more dwarfing the tree, the less vigor of the rootstock. So an M26 rootstock is about as small as you can get dwarfing without having to stake a tree. And in some cases, if you have it in a windy area, you probably want to stake it because the roots aren't strong enough to hold the tree upright.
Mm-hmm.
And then if going the next size rootstock that we use is M7, also the Malling 7, and that is what we call a semi-dwarf rootstock. And that makes a tree between 12 to 16 feet in height. So it's a bigger tree, but the rootstock is more vigorous and that doesn't need to be staked. Those are the two examples of mm-hmm. what we use.
And there are dozens of others.
Yes, there are many, many more. But those two have worked well for us here in our climate, so that's why we use them. So we get this rootstock, and you can have either grow your own from seed, which would make a standard size tree, which would get to be 30 or 40 feet tall, or use these dwarfing rootstocks. And so there's the rootstock, and then we're talking about collecting scionwood. And so if we have this apple tree, now the important thing with gathering scionwood is you want to find wood that grew last year. That's the best wood to use for grafting. New shoots, a lot of times they're on the upper part of the tree, so you need a ladder possibly to get up there. But you want to get a piece of wood, and it would be probably at least a foot long, maybe longer. The diameter, ideal diameter, is going to have to, you're going to want it to fit your rootstock, and that's going to be somewhere around pencil size diameter.
Yeah, what we're trying to do here is to line up to match the size of the scion wood with the size of the rootstock.
Right.
Stock.
That's right.
So when you put them together, they're about the same size,
that's
pencil
right.
size.
That's right. And then what happens when you put them together through this miracle called grafting, miracle process, if they're compatible, which in a sense, you can't take, for example, a pear and graft it onto an apple. I mean, it might grow a little bit, but it's not compatible. It's not close enough genetically. So you need an apple on apple.
Right. It's just like mammals.
Yeah.
You know, bears can't mate with cougars.
That's right.
Well, all right.
That's right.
Bad example.
Yeah, okay. So that genetic material that you've matched up and you put those two pieces together will grow together, then form callus, hook up together, and make a tree, which then your rootstock is only there for the roots, and the top of the tree, which is the scionwood, begins to grow and it becomes your new apple tree.
So every variety of Hudson's Golden Gem started from one tree.
That's right. Every tree of Hudson's Golden Gem is essentially the same tree, just multiplied.
It's clones.
Clones on different rootstock.
Right.
It's pretty neat. Huh?
Right. And taking this scion wood is easy. Essentially, you'd want a piece 6 or 8 inches long. Generally, when you're cutting it, the branch might be a little taller than that, and you might get 2 or 3 scion wood pieces out of one branch.
Right.
We say a flat cut for the bottom piece, or for the bottom end of the scion wood, and a slanted for the top, just so that you don't graft them upside down.
That's pretty important.
Yes, it won't work the other way.
Yeah, right. And if you look at the buds on the plant, and this is something one should do so they can see how a plant grows, but look at the bud and you see which way is growing up. And
sometimes you would think that it's usually they're that far along, or sometimes they're not far enough along and you really can't tell, or at least I've had the experience. Boy, if that wasn't cut that way, I wouldn't know for sure what it was. So,
yeah.
And then you would gather the cyan wood now, but it's too early really to graft.
That's right. So what we do is we take that piece of wood and put it in a bag, plastic bag, a polyethylene plastic bag, like Ziploc bags are perfect for this. What I do, one of the dangers is putting too much water in the bag. Some people, I'll get cyan wood from people, they'll wrap it up in a soaking wet paper towel, and that's too wet. Mm-hmm. What I do is I just take my fingers, moisten it, get them wet, like in a bowl of water, and I toss that water in that bag.
With your fingers?
With my fingers.
Flick them.
Flick it.
Yeah.
And then I seal the bag. And that's all I do. And that will
put it in the fridge.
Put it in the fridge. And keep it there. And a good time for grafting is March, typically, you know, middle of March. You can do it later. You can do it in June, really, as long as your wood is still dormant. But as it gets later on, even in a refrigerator, buds can start pushing. And that's when things get dangerous. If the bud starts to push before the plant, the cyan wood is grafted, it can grow out. And if you grafted too late, that buds may grow before there's any connection between the cyan wood and the rootstock. And then they'll just dry up and die.
Because they're not getting,
moisture from the rootstock.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So they need to be dormant when they're grafted. That's why we keep it in the fridge.
Right.
And you can, as I said, you can keep it for quite a long time and don't overwater it. And the process of grafting itself is something that it would be good to go to a workshop, like the Home Orchard Society has one. Talk to somebody who knows how to do it. Get some sense of it. You are using a sharp knife. You want to be careful.
Well, that's why it's not passed down from generation to generation.
That's why there's so many people with missing fingers.
Right.
No, actually, it's really not that hard. And I've done thousands of grafts myself, and I still have fingers.
Yeah. And it's kind of fun.
It is.
And you know whether it works within a month, really.
Yeah.
Whether it's taken or not. So
yeah. I mean, basically, the process is you make slanting cuts on each piece. It's a little more fancy than that, but you put two slanting cuts, you wrap it with some tape or some material so that cut is sealed up well. And basically, if your rootstock is out of the ground, if you have bare rootstock, then once you've grafted it, you want to plant it either in a pot or in the ground. If your rootstock has been growing for a year, for instance, you purchased rootstock this year, planted it, let it grow during the summer, then you could graft it the following spring.
There are lots of opportunities to learn or to observe or even learn and practice how to graft. I know that the Home Orchard Society will have a grafting workshop.
February 23rd.
Okay, that'll be after next month's show. We'll try to give a reminder there. Mm-hmm. I'm doing a free one at Garden Fever in Northeast where we practice.
When's that?
I wish I could remember.
Well, that's great, Clint.
Yeah, right.
Put it on the website, right?
Yeah.
And then also, I should mention in March, which is still quite a ways in the future, there's the fruit propagation fair the Home Orchard Society puts on out at Canby in the Clackamas County Fairgrounds. So there you will be amazed. There will be little buckets of cyan wood of hundreds of varieties.
Right. And all available for the price of admission.
Yep.
They're all free.
It's quite amazing. It's quite spectacular. I don't know of any other show like that in the Northwest.
Yeah. Okay. Well, we've got, we can also talk about pruning, but maybe we should talk about our, what do we call it? The garden stumper. That's what. It's time for the garden stumper.
That's right.
So we'll come back with that. Okay, we're going to revisit the plant of the month, onions. This month's garden stumper is, what is the difference between green onions and scallions? You ever grown scallions, Jim?
You know, to be honest, no.
Okay, well, that's the question there. What is the difference between green onions and scallions? Okay. All right, well, if you know the answer to that, please give us a call, 503-231-8187. Or if you have any gardening questions, that's the same number, 231-8187. Let's just talk a bit about pruning. This is the time to do dormant pruning. And just another, well, it's not really full disclosure, but I hardly do any pruning in the winter. I'll do pruning of the peaches, nectarines, apricots in the spring, but everything else I do in the summer. Although figs, I don't know. Have you gotten any more? Do you have when do you prune your figs, Jim?
Well, we primarily prune them in the winter.
Yeah.
And because what I want to do is I want to get the old wood off and let new vigorous wood come on. So I'm actually looking for vigor, which is something the winter pruning does produce more of.
Right. And that's why I prune my apples and pears in the summer, because I don't want any more wood. They're the size that I want them to be. So that's why.
Yeah. I think a lot of people probably, until they get to your level of sophistication and success, may want to do some winter pruning, because especially if you have older trees that haven't been pruned,
you know,
you've got to get some of that old, funky, you know, non-productive wood off there to give air and light and to get into the tree. And it's not going to really make it much more vigorous if you prune some of that old wood off. You're just going to, like, get the plant in happier condition.
And you really can see the structure of the tree a lot better when the leaves aren't on their end of the fruit.
That's right. That's right. So for that purpose, I think that winter pruning, like I was looking at a tree yesterday that I have several, probably, you could probably imagine, you know, planted things for over 20, 30 years, and I have this like little climax forest of fruit trees, but some that really need to be reduced in size, and some that just have, you know, they just are not as happy as they would be,
mm-hmm.
As if they just had some thinning.
If you do want to, you know, if your trees are about the size that you want them to be, and you want to start in on the summer pruning, I would not recommend waiting until the summer to do that pruning. I would prune now, like you've normally been doing, and then prune again in the summer.
Mm-hmm.
And in the summer, all we're doing is taking off water shoots, sprouts. Essentially, this is my rule of thumb, anything that I can cut with my hand pruners, not loppers or a chainsaw, just hand pruners. Now, I realize, you know, if you have stronger hands, then you can get to bigger branches, but that's the way it is.
Mm-hmm.
So you'd be pruning twice. Don't let it go in a year and a half. Well, I think you understand that.
Right.
And if you do have a tree that's out of control, like Jim mentioned, that needs some opening up in the middle, don't try to do that all in 1 year. Maybe take 3 years to make those pruning cuts, because the tree will respond. You're fighting genetics here once again, and the tree will want to be 20 or 30 feet tall, whatever it is. So if you take off a lot, it'll give you back a lot.
Yeah, and
non-productive
it will be an unpleasant surprise, because after you finish pruning, you think, oh my, what a wonderful little tree I've just created. And then midsummer, oh my, what a monster I've created. So yeah, Glenn, you're absolutely right.
And two, there's basically just two types of pruning cuts that we'll talk about here. I suppose there's more. We call them thinning cuts and heading cuts. Most of your cuts will be thinning cuts. That is to say, you're just taking out wood back to a branch where it starts, the crotch, if you will, where the branching starts out there. That's a thinning cut, and it makes sense to call it that, because you're actually taking out some wood back to a branching area, and then the tree won't respond with as much new growth. On the other hand, if you make a heading cut, think of it, you know, just cutting, you know, beheading yourself, cutting you off right there at the head, the tree will respond by putting out a lot of little branches at that point, or back the branch a little bit where there was a node, but you'll end up with a hydra type of
more branches, basically.
Right,
more branches.
And so that is not good. Generally, that is not good, unless we're talking about peaches and apricots, nectarines, where we want to stimulate new wood growth, because that is where the fruit is going to come the next year.
Mm-hmm.
On new growth, you will have new, that's where the fruit will grow, unlike apples and pears.
And for very young trees, heading cuts are good, because you want to get branches. You don't want big long shoots. You want to get branches closer to the trunk. And one thing, this is kind of interesting concept that I is that what's called apical dominance. So people understand that when you cut off that tip bud on a branch, it lets the buds below that tip bud grow, where otherwise that apical bud, the one at the very end, will actually suppress the growth of the buds below it.
Right. It has it's a hormone called auxin, A-U-X-I-N. And when you cut that off, it's kind of like a suppression.
Right.
The suppression drug.
It sends a little message.
Yeah, it's kind of
there.
A chemical castration, maybe, huh?
Yeah,
and it just won't let them grow. And that's right. Why we have this apical dominance. It's why the trees are shaped the way they are.
Right. So heading back to get branch growth is a very young tree is
desirable and necessary.
Yeah.
Good point. Good point there. So that's a little primer on pruning. There's books that you can read on that, but you just get out there and do it. I'd say it's the more harm is going to be done by not pruning than pruning.
Another thing that we've started using out at the nursery, which is interesting, there's been some research done on putting things on a cut. The old style was to paint them with tree paint.
Yeah.
People don't do that anymore, but that's not so recommended, at least in most pruning situations.
Right.
But what we found, and I'm trying to remember the exact solution, but there's a we take is it Dreft, I believe it is, a baby soap.
Hmm.
And we
talked about this in the past.
Yeah,
here.
We mix it to, I think, 50% with water. And after we make especially a larger pruning cut, anything more than about 3/4 inch in diameter, you can do it on all pruning cuts. You just paint this soap solution on. And it seems to stop the rot organisms that would otherwise, but it might go into that wound to not do it.
Okay. Well, that's something to keep in mind or to check out.
Yeah.
All right, Kurt, you ready to do our next piece here? This is from Climax Blues Band. It's called Cutting Up Rough. Cutting Up Rough, Climax Blues Band there, wrapping up our talk on fruit tree pruning, but we do have some more pruning to talk about, kiwis particularly, after we talk to David about his apple, I believe it was. You there? Good morning.
How are you doing today?
Very well, thank you.
Good. Hey, I've got an Espaillard apple, four variety.
Mm-hmm.
It's been in the ground about 2 years. And this last growing season, I got leaves, I got flowers, you know, blossoms, but no fruit. And granted, it's a small tree, but the first question, can I help it as far as pollinating it? It's in a garden had a bunch of raised beds around it so there were access to a lot of pollinators, but seemed to work.
I'll let Jim handle this after I say that, you know, it could be a pollinizer problem. It could be a pollinator problem.
Okay.
You know, the difference being that the pollinizer is the insect. The pollinator would be another variety. Now, you say this is a four-way. You know, were they all blooming at the same time?
All but the one of the varieties is a Liberty, and it was a little later, I believe. The other three, which I can't remember all of them.
Yeah.
There's a Golden Delicious, there's a, and I can't remember the other.
Is it Gravenstein, Gravenstein one?
Might have been.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Well, Jim can talk about the Gravenstein and he'll, whatever your thoughts are.
Sure. If the plants are blooming and you're getting blooms on all, obviously what has to happen is the pollen has to move from one variety, not one flower, but one variety to another variety. And Glenn was mentioning Gravenstein because it itself is not a good pollinator. Or pollinizer, as you were defining it. I think I might have said it the other way around for me. But anyway, one of the variety, the pollen has to move, and it has to move from a good variety to another variety. So, for instance, a Liberty, if it were blooming at the same time, would pollinate the Gravenstein, but the Gravenstein would not pollinate the Liberty.
Yeah.
And your neighbor's plants can do the same thing. My guess is if you've got flowers on three of the four varieties, that you may not have had the movement of the pollen around, because there's no other reason that I can think of why it wouldn't set fruit.
Do you know?
I could be helping it along by taking a Q-tip or something and passing pollen from flower to flower and so on. And
yeah, that would be great.
You could do that. It could be this too, that the insect, the vector, the pollinator just wasn't there because there weren't enough blooms to attract them there.
Right.
So, and that could be a thought.
You might think about keeping mason bees?
Yes.
Because they tend to do better because they don't travel far from their nest, so they visit the same plants over and over again, and they're very easy to do.
But certainly try the hand pollinating, because you have to make the right sounds when you do that. You know,
I'd give them a dope slap.
Now, one more question on, like I said, it was set up to espalier, and I'm making it into. I don't quite have the room to extend it as far as I'd like. So I'm making it into kind of a circular espalier, and so it's on about an 8 foot wide, 8 foot tall trellis, and I've got a lot of vertical branches this winter, and I want to cut some of those verticals down so that I can promote the horizontal growth.
That's just what we were talking about.
It's now a good time to do that.
You bet. That's the pruning that we were talking about.
All right.
And you'll probably notice that there'll be fruiting spurs and there'll be more vegetative growth that's growing more vigorously, and it's that vegetative growth that you want to remove. And if you don't have the fruiting areas yet, the flower buds, you can prune those back to 2 or 3 inches above the horizontal branch. So that you to keep it, and then those should create new flower producing areas. But
okay,
That's what, you know, the tree wants to grow up. That's its nature. And so you're trying to make it do something that it doesn't naturally want to do.
And right. Just remember that the most productive wood is on about 45 degree angles.
Okay.
So.
Okay, good.
All right.
All right. Well, thank you.
You bet. Good luck.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
Okay, Kurt. Esteban, good morning. You're with the Dirtbag.
Yes, good morning, gentlemen. Thank you for being there.
Sure.
Okay, one question about the difference of the scallions and the onions.
Yes.
Does it have anything to do with the planting depth?
Nope.
Okay,
nope.
Missed that one. Okay, is there any efficacy or practicality of taking pruned fruit trees' limbs and grafting them right back to the same tree that you've just cut them off of?
What would be the purpose for that?
Well, to make them bushier on the lower branches, and to keep the height down.
Do you want to? I mean, I think both of our answers would be no. There's no efficacy in that. It would just be better to prune it to spur branches to come out where you want them to do that.
And
there's ways that you can do that. And Jim, maybe you can help me here. You know, if you notch above a bud, you'll get a branch. If you notch below it, you won't. Is that it?
You know, that's been a long time since I explored that. So I'm sorry. I can't remember
which one it is, too. Yeah. But there is that technique. You might check that out, Esteban.
Just notch into the
cambium layer
itself.
Right. But check it out online because I can't remember which one it is.
Yeah, logically, if you were to cut above a bud, you would then reduce the apical dominance of the ones above that, so it should grow. So if you were if you were making a notch above a bud, you should make that bud grow.
Allow it to grow. Right. Mm-hmm. All right.
Well, I'll leave you with an old Oriental saying that peasant who work for vegetables ask for a raise in celery. Okay, I can hear the scoring.
That's very good.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Okay, we're still looking for the answer about the difference between green onions and scallions. We've got another caller. Good morning, Frost. You're with the Dirtbag.
Hi, yeah. The scallion, the top part of the green onion, and the green onion's the lower part?
No, sorry.
I call it. Go ahead.
Sorry, we're making this too difficult here.
It's just a varietal based on region?
Well, there can be some varietal differences here. I don't know. We're running out of time. I might just tell you the answer is that they're the same thing.
Okay, there we go.
They are the same thing.
Question.
Right. But oftentimes we'll plant certain types of onions like bulbing onions or branching onions, and they just don't bulb. I shouldn't have said bulbing onions, branching onions.
Okay.
That they just don't grow much of a bulb, but you can. Even if you plant a bulbing onion and you harvest it early, which if you want to thin them, then essentially that's a green onion or a scallion.
Okay.
Right? Now, there is a difference between shallots and onions, but that wasn't the question. So.
Well, I didn't know if you had time to take a question about Satsuma plum.
Sure.
I've been raising this thing from the little twig tree it started out as and did some fairly aggressive pruning to get three main terminal branches. And then from there, last year, when it had the full growth, it had a big canopy, I took away down to kind of a secondary branch that came off those three, kind of following standard, you know, aggressive pruning techniques and trying to get the shape. I had some issues with fruiting last year, and I realized that the fruiting branches come off the side and the vegetative off the top. Is there any way to help promote the fruiting besides pollinating in the pruning process?
Are you speaking about the does it have flowering? I mean, are you getting flowers?
Yes, I'm getting flowers, and like I really 2 years ago I had a fairly decent fruit drop and probably a couple dozen fruit, and last year I had maybe a half dozen and they were dropping a little early. There's wasn't quite the output I expected. The tree has a lot of vigorous growth and seems really healthy.
Yeah, and so what you're getting a lot of flowers, but not much fruit. Is that what you're
saying? Well, you pruned before the flowers came out last year. Is that right? Right.
Yes.
And what kind of a tree was this?
It's a Satsuma.
Satsuma. Okay.
Yeah. Well, of course, the Satsuma, being a Japanese plum, requires a pollinator too. And do you have another Japanese plum somewhere nearby, or is it?
There's a plum that's two doors down, mm-hmm. or maybe three houses down. It's a very old, established tree, but it's not a Satsuma. Mm-hmm. Does it require?
Is it a European?
It is a
plum?
European.
But they do somewhat cross-pollinate.
They can somewhat cross-pollinate, mm-hmm. but Japanese mm-hmm. plums typically mm-hmm. are better to use as to have another Japanese plum variety. Bloom time sometimes isn't. Japanese plums typically bloom earlier than the Europeans do.
Yeah, so then it wouldn't expose itself. Wouldn't be, you know, the pollinizers wouldn't be able to effectively pollinate.
Right.
Because of the bloom cycle.
That's right. And if you have flowers, there's two reasons, sort of what we're talking about earlier, that you won't get fruit. One is you're not getting the pollen on the flowers because there's no bees or anything else carrying it there, or the pollen that they are carrying is not compatible.
I'd probably go with the latter of the two, because I do have a fair amount of different pollinators in the yard. The bees love the laurels, and it's almost like a little hive for them. So I know that they're kind of buzzing about and doing their work, and there's a couple of different varieties of bees in the Oregon, a couple of masons.
Well, once again, they still have to be carrying the right pollen. They're there, certainly.
Right. So it may be useful if you have the room to put another Japanese plum in.
Okay, is there another? The thing is, I've got some espalier, some pear trees and such. We're really trying to keep like a low profile. It's right alongside the garden, so I don't want to have a huge canopy. Is there any dwarf varieties of the Japanese that you might recommend?
Well, there's none specific dwarfs that I know of, but pruning like you're doing, I think will help. You can keep them fairly small,
and you really need to prune prunes or plums.
Yeah, yes,
I've grubbed some out because they've been too aggressive.
If you really want to have fun, you could try grafting a branch from You can go to the Scion Exchange, the Home Orchard Society event, get a piece of scionwood and learn how to graft it and graft it onto one of your branches, and then you can have two varieties on the same tree.
Okay, yeah, I've been fairly successful at doing some grafting and some branch repair.
There's your answer.
Yeah, so there we go. Hey, thank you.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
And thanks to all who called. Well, I'm sorry we didn't get onto the kiwi pruning, but next month.
We still have time.
Yeah, but we subscribe to the best time to prune kiwis is when your pruners are sharp. So plenty of time. We'll be talking about great pruning at that point too. So, okay. Jim, thank you very much.
Great to be with you again, Glenn.
I hope to see many of you at these upcoming events. This is Glenn Andreessen. Thanks for listening. We'll be back next month. Be well.
This KABU program has been made possible in part by KABU Foundation members and a grant from Artemis Foods, Portland's local organic and sustainable catering company since 2001. Special events, corporate and wedding catering with seasonal menus and service supported by sustainable business operations. They offer full service and drop-off catering. Information by phone or through their website, www.artemisfoods.com. You are listening to KBOO Portland, 90.7 FM, 91.9 FM Hood River and the Gorge, 100.7 FM Corvallis and Albany. The time is 11:59. Coming up at 12 o'clock is Jazz Lives with your host, Nick Geffro.
KABU Community Radio and the Clinton Street Theater presents a monthly film series on the second Thursday of each month. January 10th at 7 p.m., we present the 1988 film Talk Radio, in which a rude, contemptuous talk show host becomes overwhelmed by the hatred that surrounds his program just before it goes national.
Open your mouth and tell me what we're going to do about the mess this country's in. Talk Radio! It's the last neighborhood in town. People just don't talk to each other anymore. Let's go to the first caller. Night Talk.
Before the film, we'll hear Carl Wolfson, who will talk about his experience as a talk show host in Portland. And the film will be introduced by a KABU board member and Wednesday morning talk show host, Lisa Loving. That's January 10th at the Clinton Street Theater at 7 p.m. More information can be found at kabu.fm/kabufilms.
And now, the KBOO Noon headlines. The City Council of Olympia, Washington, voted last night to ban homeless camping within the city limits. While dozens of people protested outside the city hall, the council argued the ordinance was to address health and safety concerns for the homeless population. The ban takes place on February 8th. A very different ruling came recently from the Eugene City Council, who voted to allow the use of tents on city property. After protesters were denied twice, the city council has said that it will recognize the tents as symbols of free speech. Protesters were jubilant at the victory for homeless rights and vowed to keep up the fight for homeless citizens. In Redmond, Oregon, the city council voted yesterday to install 14 security cameras throughout the city to be put in place this winter. The cameras will cost the city $120,000, but council members say it's worth it to deter vandalism and other crimes in the growing central Oregon town. Striking farm workers in South Africa's grape-growing region set fire to car tires and vehicles yesterday as police fired rubber bullets into the crowd. After negotiations over a higher minimum wage broke down last week, many grape pickers walked out on the job. This follows protests in December staged by warehouse workers in charge of bottling the wine, in which two warehouses went up in flames. Global retailing giant Uniqlo issued a press release yesterday that it will eliminate all hazardous chemicals involved in fabric production by 2020. Working in conjunction with Greenpeace, the Japanese-based company announced it was working hard to stop water pollution and urged other clothing companies like Calvin Klein and Victoria's Secret to step up and take social responsibility seriously. Negotiations began today between government officials and rebel leaders in the Central African Republic. The rebel group, Seleka, wants President Francois Bozize out of power and have taken control of numerous towns in the past week. Bozize, however, has called the rebels, quote, mercenary terrorists, and has received support from other neighboring African nations to help put down the rebel attacks. Tune in every weekday evening.